I was able to push the buttons without major mistakes. We always start out, of course, these we do these every 2 weeks. We start out with news from Washington with Glo. Glo, anything that you've heard from Washington?
Actually, no, and I just talked to him this morning to see if there were any announcements that he specifically wanted me to talk about today, and everything's just pretty much as it was the last time. Okay. The job training grants are still on schedule, and there's really nothing new to announce.
Good. Well,
he was
actually
pretty boring this morning.
it's quiet in EPA.
Good.
But, you know, an interesting thing along the line of Earth Week and conservation, there's been some activity with the Forest Service, and one of the things that we've put in the newsletter, which we'll, of course, we send to everyone, and if you're not on the list, just send it to me, but if you're getting notices, you're on the list. Park Service, we've been talking about this 21st Century Conservation Service Corps program, and this is aimed at, it is a grant opportunity. I believe the grants are due in May, but there are going to be 40 grants awarded. It's a total of about $20 million, so these are fairly large grants. And usually Conservation Corps, you think of youth summer jobs, but these are also aimed at youth and veterans, so they've kind of expanded a little bit. And it's basically the Conservation Corps, 21st Century Conservation Corps, not necessarily our environmental job training, hardcore training for vocation to put them into jobs, but it's kind of a related field. And actually some of our grantees have been involved in Youth Corps and working synergistically their environmental job training and also Youth Corps activities. And it's something to worth look at. I'll put them in the notes, but you want to go to grants.gov, and it'll give you the RFP there, and it'll give you all the details about that grant program. And it's a good thing to start looking at grants.gov. Someone just joined?
Lynn Keepers.
Hey, Lynn, how are you?
Good. How
are
you?
Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Good to see you. You know, Lynn, we were just talking about Conservation Corps, the Youth Corps.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, a big grant opportunity, 40 grants, $20 million for the 21st century. Are you all going to participate in that? Or?
I don't know. I'm working also with another group out of Philadelphia, and they may be applying.
Oh, okay, great. It's a fairly large program, and of course it's youth, but they've also expanded to veterans. And someone just joined.
Bruce.
Hey, Bruce. So that's something worth looking. I'll put it in the notes, and it's a good thing to go to grants.gov anyway, because beginning in October, and even some of the grants that are due just before that are asking, the only way you can apply is through grants.gov. But it's got the RFP in there and all the details. There is another interesting RFP that's out. It's through Department of Labor. It's Employment and Training Administration. This is through the Office of course, Training Administration and Apprenticeship, but it's through the Women's Bureau, and it's going to be about four grants that'll be $400,000 to about $650,000, two-year grants. It's a total of $1.9 million, and it's for basically what the environmental job training program is about. It's about outreach, recruitment, hiring, training, and employing women of color, women with disabilities and apprenticeships for non-traditional occupations. And, of course, we're a non-traditional occupation. So it's an obscure grant, but it might be, again, worth looking at that to see what's involved. Department of Labor grants are nice to get involved in because they seem to be, with the new presidential initiative, they seem to be getting a lot more attention.
And so, I think community-based agencies are eligible to apply for that, but not governmental entities.
Correct.
Oh, not governmental agencies, so not the cities or anything.
Right.
Like that. No, okay, thank you.
The,
but it's on the grants.gov already, yes?
It is.
It should
okay.
be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, educational institutions and 501c3s are
right.
for those. And if you're a city, you can just perhaps go to one of your training partners and you might be able to team up with them somehow as a partner.
Well, or just let them know that, you know, it's always good to spread the word. Perhaps they do, perhaps they don't. So, yes, absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
We'd like to talk about these peripheral grants because, of course, leveraging is one thing, but also working with synergistic type programs is extremely important because it can add the extra oomph, carry you over if one grant leaves off and from there. Well, one of the things that we wanted to talk about, and we've never talked about this in the PLCs, is the addressing educational disparities. We've talked about problems that occur when you bring a group of participants in, and you've got, and we talked about this with Nye County, they had people who were just out of high school, and they had people who had not been in a classroom for 25 years. And they had veterans, and they may have had some disabled people, and they may have some ex-offenders. So this is all well and good, and they may work well together. They may also, in terms of verbal skills, they may be mixed, but when it comes to primarily reading math, we may have, that's where our issues begin. And so a tremendous, perhaps the biggest headwinds in training, you know, is that reading, comprehension, math, and bringing everyone up to the same level. So I thought I asked Paula, who was JFY, is one of our original, as is New Jersey Youth Corps, one of our kind of founding grantees. And interesting enough, neither one of them are grantees currently not receiving funding. But they do keep in touch, and it's great in our community of job training programs. And we really appreciate them continuing to offer to mentor our grantees and potential grantees. JFY has had received several grants. I think they also worked in the Minority Worker Training Program with NIHS. They're located in Boston, and they had several very successful programs. And about 2 years ago, I believe, you started to kind of shift gears. And why don't you tell us about your program?
Sure. I'll give you a chronology, and then I'll go first by a brief chronology with relevant stuff, and then I'll go right into the e-learning and how we actually got into that in the first place. So thank you, Ty Lynn. It's long time no see.
Yeah.
JFY Networks, we're based in Boston, and the JFY stands for our former name, which was Jobs for Youth, founded in the 70s when, youth employment was actually a public policy, which it doesn't seem to be anymore, but that's just my opinion. When I joined Jobs for Youth in 1995, things were already sort of under construction. Jobs for Youth's original mission was to find jobs for high school dropouts, but quickly realized that the high school dropout was really the problem, the primary problem, rather than the jobs were a secondary problem. So JFY has had a alternative high school, a GED, ABE program, as well as we ventured into the sectoral job training as opposed to just general job training and job readiness. So in 1997, with a Ford Foundation grant, we partnered with Strive, which was just starting a Boston branch, to combine JFY's sectoral training in environmental technology and also financial services with STRIVE's attitudinal and job readiness approach, which they were looking for. They were looking also to transition into more specific employer-related sectoral job training. So this is actually what launched that. So we've always had a computer lab and taught classes in basic computer literacy. So that's been part of one of our core values. In around the late 90s and early 2000s, our performance data showed that the number of people who could qualify for our job training programs was starting to shrink. And the qualifiers were based on 8th grade reading and 6th grade math. And we sort of struggled between 6th and 8th grade for math. But 6th grade, we polled some other programs, and 6th grade seemed to be probably good enough to do the work that was required, the academic work that was required in the program. So we were looking at the percentage of people who were not qualifying, and the largest percentage seemed to be at the margins. You mentioned folks who hadn't been in a classroom for many years. So that's one thing that can do it. Some people who actually never learned basic skills like long division. They didn't like it, so they just avoided it, and now that they actually need to do it, it's come back to them. So, again, we were also looking at leveraging the most out of our, out of our computer lab, not just teaching people basic skills, and sort of as things start to line up, we were exploring the possibility of some kind of e-learning boot camps where we would have curriculum, and people could be assessed and learn what they needed to learn rather than sit through an entire remedial class. And I'll get back to that theme as we launch forward. So what we did was we had actually two particular tracks. One was kind of people who were available to spend 4 weeks prior to the start of the training program, the actual training program, and have them really sort of do a four-week boot camp to boost their academic performance so that they could, in fact, qualify for the program. So those were sort of provisional acceptances. And for some other people, and this was, totally based on scores, with some exceptions on an individual basis, people who could spend a longer period of time doing that, particularly if they didn't really have 4 weeks to do with something intensive. They could come in because all of the instruction was based upon their assessment, so it's individualized. Here's what you need to learn, and you could do practice and practice assessments and then be retaped and hopefully and in most more cases than not, they would be able to qualify and get first preference for the next training cycle. So we were using one particular program, and which was probably one of the most comprehensive on the market at the time. So in the early 2000s, we were approached by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, otherwise known as the State of Massachusetts, to do something. Massachusetts had just instituted state standards, which we'd never had before. So that would mean that there would be a qualifying exam every 4 years, and at the end of 10th grade, an exam that you had to pass in order to graduate from high school. The first several years of that exam, there were huge failure rates and achievement gaps and all of that. And the state knew that we were doing this and asked if we could apply our methodology to this MCAS failure rate.
And they gave us money to do that, and we also got some federal money from the U.S. Department of Education to do this, kind of on a statewide application, but schools had to agree to participate. So we were working at that time in up to 40 schools, doing this assessment, instruction, and final assessment, and we were able to demonstrate that scores did improve those cohorts of students who had previously failed in the 10th grade and retook the exam in the 11th grade were able to significantly boost their scores and be proficient on their academic performance. So back to the the process really, just very generally, what it meant for us was to align the curriculum modules, the software curriculum modules, to each of the competencies in what was called, and I guess is still called, the Massachusetts State Standards. So detailed down to each competency, we have a alignment of curriculum exercises that help each person practice and gain competency in that particular, to gain proficiency in that particular competency. So, and it could be as simple, I keep mentioning long division, because actually that is, we found that to be a big deficiency. People just did not either remember or ever learned long division. So we sort of done an analysis of what the competencies are, and that's a big one. So I'll probably refer to that more than anything else, but there are several others. Multiplying fractions is another. Back to the labor market, however, since we were still doing our environmental workforce development programs. And as Mike mentioned, not just with EPA, but also with NIEHS, the Minority Worker Training Program. And then a couple of statewide green jobs initiatives when green jobs became a thing. One of the things that we noticed here in Massachusetts in particular was that the bar was for job competencies seemed to be rising. And another factor was that when unemployment is employment is high, when it's, you know, when we're going towards a scale of full employment, then the demand is low. But when there's competition, really intense competition for jobs, it was the people with at least associate degrees, or in some cases 4-year degrees, who were edging out or seemed to be edging out some of our job applicants. So we were trying to figure out what to do with that. And then there was also something that we referred to as green jobs backlash, and some demands for credentialing. We've got all these green jobs programs, and who knows what people are actually qualified to do, which we kept hearing. And how do we know that your program is actually good, even though we're looking at, you know, we were looking at very high placement rates and a sound curriculum and lots of certifications. But there was, again, some pressure for higher level credentialing. So in around 2009, I believe, I didn't actually check this, we were at a workforce forum here in Boston. Jane Oates was here when she was still at Department of Labor as Assistant Secretary for Employment and Training. And she announced a major shift in workforce development funding that was going to go towards community colleges and away from community-based organizations. And the role of community-based organizations, as she described it, would now be, she said, what CBOs did best was general job readiness and adult basic education to prepare entrance for community college or advanced certificate enrollment. So that was kind of a major, that was a major thing to deal with for us as a community-based organization and not affiliated with our local workforce investment board. So again, we do lots of labor market research here, and just thought about, well, we also run a very good job training program. So we really, you know, our mission has evolved from just doing general job readiness training. It's very hard to it's very hard to get the kinds of outcomes that you really want. We did have an ABE program, Adult Basic Education Program. So we kept looking at how we would update and adapt our business model and stay true to our mission. So now we are completely focused on e-learning and blended learning, which is a combination of online learning and teacher-centered. And we've grown our partnerships with the public schools on what's now the Common Core, which is where MCAS in Massachusetts is evolving towards. Massachusetts has accepted Common Core and also one of the two exams, PARC. Common Core is supposed to be for high school graduates a better set of competencies for not just college but also for career. So this is college and career readiness, which is, well, it remains to be seen, but it is national. It's one step beyond No Child Left Behind. But the fact that workforce and education are coming together is encouraging. We think it's encouraging, but our work focuses on our partnerships with high schools, and we use mostly juniors and seniors, and also what we call community college clusters. So three community colleges at present, three community colleges at present, and their feeder schools. So working with a similar model as we did with employees, what are the entry competencies, and what do high school students need to do to prepare for qualifying scores on ACCUPLACER, which is what we use in Massachusetts. Okay. There are two entrance exams for community colleges. Those of you for community colleges will know. One is ACCUPLACER, the other is COMPASS. So that these students, again, we focus on the gaps and closing those gaps between disadvantaged students and more advantaged students, and so that they don't get assigned to remedial courses, which are non-credit courses for which they have to pay tuition. We want them to be prepared to go into community college degree programs and to take credit-bearing courses and not use up their Pell Grants or any other financial aid on remedial courses. Another thing that we saw, just going back to our job training program, which ended, our last grant ended on December 2012. Something we were noticing as well in those classes, and we really had to justify to EPA and other funders why we were accepting people that had 1 or 2 years of community college. And the economic data showed that employment or unemployment rates for community college dropouts were no better than for high school dropouts. But a deeper dig into that showed that these were exactly the people that we're now trying to help because they had been stuck in remedial classes, used up their financial aid, and then really had no other options and were happy to find programs like ours where they could where they could pursue some career-related training and become employed because their options had run out at the community college. So two things we do. There's that, and then we also are realigning curriculum to transition from MCAS to what here is PART. There are two ways to measure Common Core competencies. One is PARC, and Massachusetts is a PARC state, primarily because our commissioner is on the National PARC Advisory Board. I think he's actually the chair. And something called Smarter Balanced. So, again, we use the same methodology of assessment, individualized short-term training where the students get what it is that they need to learn in the short term rather than having to sit through a course that takes a whole semester and that they have to also have to pay for. And so we're moving to this college and career readiness preparation. PARC is also unlike the other state standard exams, which is pencil and paper and bubble sheets or Scantrons. PARC is going to be an online test. So we have additionally in our partnerships with the school is to help them do some technology planning for how they are going to accommodate taking an online test and also to be able to have students be able to develop some competencies in taking an online test, which is quite different than taking a pencil and paper test. And we want, again, we want students to have the best possible chance for doing that. So that pretty much brings us up to date for what JFY is doing and our transition. And our e-learning, we're working with, I had asked a number of questions the last time about the use of tablets. We have a very different approach, which is just a different approach. I do want to reiterate how much I liked the use of the tablets and what they're doing in Florida. And I want to thank Mike for allowing me to give you kind of a different approach and sort of to pinpoint some our evolution against certain developments, not only in the labor market, but a kind of emerging of education and workforce development.
You know, Paula, you brought out a very interesting trend that we see there, particularly when the president put Joe Biden in charge of job training and this push towards in labor, and also towards community colleges. And we have a mix of community colleges, NGO, and governmental organizations as fiscal agents. And you made a very good observation that is getting stronger. You learned early this push of labor money going to these very large programs, many of it going to community colleges. And where does this leave the NGOs, and what is their role? And where does government fit in all
this? I think they're trying to figure that out too. I mean, we heard it from Jane. We heard Jane Oates. I think that was as startling as it was to hear. I think it was fortunate for us to hear it early on, rather than trying to figure out a couple of years later what was actually going on.
The funny thing about EPA is they seem to be trending towards governmental organizations being the fiscal agent, because they have everything in place. They have the leveraging, they have the connections. They then go to the training providers and the NGOs as subgrantees because they have access to all these things. So they're almost, in EPA, they're almost going counter to the trend that, a larger trend that's going in a little different direction.
Well, it makes sense for those. I mean, clearly EPA has uncovered through the competitive process those governmental entities that really can do this and really see it as a benefit. I was driving to New York City last weekend, and from Boston, and which you have to go through both Waterbury and Bridgeport, and so those two workforce investment boards come to mind as people who have been, you know, they seem to be able to do exactly what you said, which is to leverage their training partners. And also, I think Bridgeport has managed to leverage training partners on a regional basis, and they've applied for, they've been able to secure some really large regional workforce development grants with entities in New York State, for instance. On the green job. So
the general trend we're going to see is a lot of money going into job training. Now the question is, where is it going to go?
Where is it going? Yes.
And their, you know, EPA's program right now seems pretty solid. They're going ahead with it. They're a very small, very, very small program. But there are these much larger ones like the Forest Service and some of these ETA programs. And I think maybe the strategy for all our grantees or potential grantees is to team up with the training providers or community colleges or a university, the NGOs that are strong, and then the governmental organizations, and kind of sit down and say, who's in the best position here to attack these federal funds or that's available. Anyone out there that has experience in how they might go about doing this, or that they found works in their area? I know. Go ahead.
Hello?
This is Ann with Memphis Fireworks, and we've been successful with teaming up with the community colleges, specifically with the DOL grants and the TAC grants.
And you're a NGO. You're a non-501c3, but you're a fiscal agent pairing up with a community college in your case. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Which is it?
Hello? Hello?
Yes.
Hi. this is Vanessa Frazier. I'm calling from Howardville, Missouri. And that's an interesting concept about the teaming with community colleges. We're a nonprofit community-based organization. We're 501c3. But there are no colleges in our area of five counties of Southeast Missouri that provide job training. So is the way the trend is going is going to be kind of hard unless we really make the case that we should be a part of the competitiveness of where the money is going towards. Are we going to be left out?
Well, Lynn has been there. A very interesting organization, has expanded very dramatically. And Lynn, you all have pretty much gone with the times and the flow, and you've been able to work with state government very successfully. What is your experience?
That's true. We have been, but unfortunately, when you're working with a state agency, the priorities do shift, and you know what we think is going to benefit and help grow a program is not always what's considered to be real-time job availability according to the research. And a lot of times the way they want to go after funding is driven by the research that they can get their hands on, not always reflecting what's actually happening on the ground because there are different pockets of geography that we work with that really do have an impact on it. But I've really moved from what I was doing previously with youth to working with apprenticeship programs and training women and minorities for work in the building and construction trades. And we have a interesting pot of money that's one half of 1% of every public contract over $1 million goes into a fund that we can access for training women and minorities in building and construction trades. And one of the things I'm trying to do is embed not only the basic skills piece in every RFP that we put out or every program that we're doing for training, but to also embed the environmental technician brownfields job training piece, at least the OSHA 40 piece into every RFP as a requirement. So linking that with apprenticeable occupations and growing it that way is something that I think has a possibility for us at the state level.
We see tremendous linkage between the construction trades and the environmental training.
Absolutely.
And in fact, what previous PLCs we talked about is having a pre-program
mm-hmm.
and running people through OSHA, the HAZWOPER, and then construction trades,
mm-hmm.
Construction Safety, Construction 10, or General Construction or Industrial Construction.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking, as those courses go on, you're looking and observing your best students.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of your pre-training, and you might even do some ecology or some conservation work and general things, you select, as part of that selection process, you're eyeing your best students, and then you're sitting down saying, would you like, after you finish your construction training, would you like to have an environmental supplement that's going to give you all of these certifications?
Mm-hmm.
So that when you're on the job, you can work with lead. You might be doing painting or general construction, but you're going to have a lead certificate that no one else will have. And you can kind of cherry pick your best students.
And trying to turn that whole program into stackable credentials, as they call it.
Yeah.
That's
great.
But as I think Paula just said a few minutes ago, the end result has to be a job.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I think we're designing programs and working backwards. We really need to develop more jobs with employers, do actual job development like we used to in the 70s, Paula.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That we can develop jobs for young people to go into and then design the program around what those jobs are going to be. So
we're sorry.
Go ahead.
This is Pam Carunchio at Energy Coordinating Agency in Philadelphia. We have a similar challenge in that the entry level and even the higher energy, clean energy positions are not high priority occupations in our WIB.
Right.
And so it's really hard for us to make the case. And one thing we do is keep sharing with people, look on the horizon of what's happening in policy, because we have statewide legislation mandating reduction in electrical usage between now and 2015-16, and the new EPA regs coming out that cities have to adhere to, and the new mandate by the Weatherization Assistance Program for home energy professional for the WAP workforce by January 2015. So we keep saying, yes, and in terms of market transformation, this is what's happening. And then I just want to share, we have a pre-apprenticeship program that does a lot of what you're describing, the entry-level courses and certifications. And right now we have a group of 5 high schools that are sending their kids through this program at our training center. And then the students can then, we hope, access our apprenticeship programs, which DOL did approve for energy auditors and weatherization installers. So if it would be useful to anybody for me to share those resources with you, I'd be happy to. In terms of community colleges, we partner with Community College of Philadelphia. They helped us, we helped them create a building science track, a new track in their department. They helped us create the apprenticeship programs. And they actually accredit the BPI and other entry-level coursework. Everybody's talking about the OSHA and EPA certifications. So that students who start with us pre-apprenticeship can go on toward their associate's degree and rack up those credits. So they've been a wonderful partner for us.
So what we do is we use construction trades as the front man or the
yeah.
But then we hide the environmental specific training behind that that gives them additional skills that adds on to the construction. And you're right. This is one occupation even the occupational titles don't have sufficiently address environmental occupations, and it's kind of hidden way down in the pack of jobs.
And where are you? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, where were you located?
Energy Coordinating Agency, we're in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
I'll put your contact information, Pam, in the notes.
Okay. Sure, be glad to. Be
I'd
glad
love to have
to.
A further conversation.
Yeah, Pam,
that'd be
you,
great.
This is Paula. Are you what type of an organization are you?
We're a 501c3. We started out, we're 30 years old this year. We started out as really intrinsically weatherization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing up to 3,000 homes a year in the Philadelphia area. Now we do water conservation as well,
mm-hmm.
and we became a BPI affiliate, Building Performance Institute training affiliate in 2008.
Yeah,
and then
program.
We built the training center that we knew we needed, and I'm sitting in it now. And thank God the 30 kids outside my door are not on power tools right now, so I can talk to you. But now we do training, and we're IREC accredited.
Terrific.
So
terrific.
It's been building blocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's being in a large metropolitan area has given us the demand we need, even though the market transformation is still has a long way to go.
Pam, we're going to recruit you for one of our PLCs, so you can tell us all about your program, if it's all right.
I'll get my buddies. I'll get the director of the training center with me.
Okay. We do promise to hold these at 30 minutes, and, of course, we broke our promise. But I'm going to put everyone's name in here. And, of course, our next PLC will be on May 7th. So come on back, and we'll talk some more and investigate whatever we want to. So we can talk about whatever we want on these calls. So we'll go from there. Well, thanks, Paula. Thanks a lot. And you've always been such a great mentor for all of us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I miss you guys, and I do want to hear more about Pam's program, even though it has so little to do with what we're doing right now, but you never know.
It all links. It all links.
You never know. It's all about making sure that people get gainful employment.
That's right.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. Okay, well, have a good week, everyone. And again,
thank you, you too.
Happy Earth Week. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.